Good morning. This is Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. From World War II and Vietnam to Afghanistan and Iraq, nearly 2 million veterans live in the tri-state. This morning, as we prepare to celebrate Memorial Day, we're going to talk about the variety of their health, medical, and job needs. Joining me are Veterans Administration Medical Center Coordinator for Dual Diagnosis Service and past commander of the Greater Cincinnati Women's Post 644 of the American Legion, Kelly Knox. Military Order of the Purple Heart Chapter 3620 Commander Tony Cole, and WVXU reporter Howard Wilkinson, who's covered far more of these veterans' issues than I have. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning. Good morning.
I think a good place to start is just to talk about how many veterans. We say there's this big number out there of veterans in the area, but let's talk about a little bit more specifics. How many right here in Greater Cincinnati, and how many from how many wars are we talking about? All the way back to World War II, I assume?
We still have a fair number of veterans from World War II. You know, of course, they're getting older, and so the bulk of our veterans now that we serve at the VA are veterans of the conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yes, that's very true. I have 162 members in my my organization, and probably 40 to 50 of them are World War II veterans. Some are still able to get around. Some are more or less housebound.
And obviously, Tony, your organization is made up of combat wounded veterans.
Yes.
Of all wars.
Our distinction is you have to be combat wounded. Doesn't matter the military branch, but you have to be wounded in combat, basically shed blood, to be a member of our organization. But our function is to serve all veterans, wounded or not, and their families.
You both mentioned the current wars. You've mentioned World War II. What about Vietnam? How many Vietnam vets are we dealing with?
Well, quite a few. In my chapter alone, we have probably 75. Those are the most active people like myself in our chapter, although we're mostly all in our 60s, 70s to some extent, but we're the ones now able to do it. We find the younger vets don't have as much time. They're married. They have a job. They have things to do. And basically, as one young vet told me, it's not really a lot of fun hanging around with old guys and funny hats. So.
Well, they were honest, I suppose, right?
Very true.
What about the needs of all these veterans? When you have such a range, and as the folks that you mentioned, World War II vets who were significantly older than the folks that served in the past 5 or 10 years, what kind of needs are you dealing with when you're trying to serve these folks?
Well, in terms of women veterans, I can tell you that the top three problems that they report to us when they come to the VA for services are PTSD, hypertension, and depression. So there are a fair number of mental health needs that our women are seeking services for.
And why is that, Kelly? Why do you think that is more predominant among women veterans?
I don't know that it's more predominant
among
women veterans. You know, I think it's as predominant among male veterans as well. You know, but military service is stressful. It's stressful for both women and men. And people experience things in the military that they don't experience in civilian life. As we know, about 80% of our fighting force support the 20% that are actually combat troops. But in today's service, and in fact going back as far as the Vietnam War, those distinctions are more vague. If you're sent off to an area of military service, you're likely to see some kind of combat operations.
I think that's very true, what Kelly said. And what we find, too, is with veterans from all genres, like back to World War II, many times things can be exacerbated as far as a condition goes because of military service, whether they be injured or maybe they had something happen to them, and they're reluctant to go to the VA to get enrolled in the medical plans down there that are available to them. Many people feel like, I have a lot of people that even have a Purple Heart that weren't wounded that bad, that they don't deserve it, that it should be held for people that are very seriously or have lost limbs, and that's just not the case.
Well, let's talk about the VA hospitals. What do they provide? Who can go? Is it anybody who's ever served in the military?
Anybody who's ever served in the military can go and enroll for VA services. The types, and I'm not a benefits officer, so I'm not going to go into detail about that because that's not my specialty. the types of benefits that they're eligible for depend on whether they're service-connected for an injury or an illness that they incurred or was made worse by their military service, and also to a certain extent on their income.
And there's a priority ranking in terms of where they fit on the scale of the level of service that they can get.
That's correct, yes.
Yes, it's 1 through 8.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. 1 being the worst, going up to 8, and then there is a monetary issue there that you may not qualify for.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this. I mean, just anecdotally, it seems to me that the Iraq and Afghanistan veterans who are coming back now or have already come back are much less aware of what they're entitled to. And I know there's been a lot of efforts in the Cincinnati VA Medical Center, for one, to try to reach out to these people and say, hey, look, you at least need to enroll. How successful has that been? How big a problem is that?
Well, you know, I can talk more specifically about women veterans, mm-hmm. because women veterans are historically both unrecognized and underserved. And, you know, we've been pretty successful. We've got about 58% of our Iraq and Afghanistan veterans who are women who are enrolled for services with the VA, which I think is a vast improvement over what's happened in the past. But unfortunately, only about half of those have been to the VA 11 or more times. So only about a quarter of those women are actually seeking services regularly at the VA.
I also think part of the problem is with men and women. When you're a young age, for instance, when I came back from Vietnam in your late teens, early 20s, you tend to want to stay away from these things. You think, to a sense, you're invulnerable. You don't really need them. You feel like it's a hassle and an intrusion. And the VA has improved. It's vastly improved. They do have people that listen. We do need to get people down there, get things on their records, their timeliness, their appointments are kept. They do a really, really good job now, and it's hard to get them down there, but they're young, and they have families, and they just think they don't need it in a lot of cases.
And for women veterans, they're just plain hard to find. We didn't even start counting women veterans until the 1980 census, and it was after that. There were about 1.4 million women in the 1980 census that identified themselves as being veterans. We know now that there are about 2 million women veterans in the United States, but there are barriers to reaching them for care. Number one, a lot of them don't identify as being veterans because there's this idea that you have to have been in combat to be considered a veteran, or you have to have been in combat to receive care at the VA, which, of course, is not true. In the early 80s, the General Accounting Office did a study, and they found that, number one, women don't identify with being veterans. And the women who were receiving services, since we didn't know how many women veterans were out there, and since the VA historically served men, the women weren't receiving complete physical examinations. And when they were coming to the VA, they were feeling alienated. And so there have been a number of really important improvements to women's health care in the past 25 years, which I think has contributed to getting so many more women enrolled for services.
That's one of the areas. And one of the big problems that we have is with privacy issues, you really don't have a right to know. The Purple Heart, for instance, would like to approach everyone from Ohio. We have 21 chapters in Ohio in their locale, and help them and get them on their way to whatever they may need, whether it's medical or disability or educational, family services, whatever we can do. But we're not privy to that information, and the government doesn't want to release that. So we do have problems with it. For a while, we tried, you can get Purple Heart license plates for free, and we wanted the DAV, or the DMV, I'm sorry, to go through us and let us know, but that practice stopped after a year.
That's correct, and it's the same with women veterans. There are some attempts to create some databases, like, for example, the state has a database of veterans, including women veterans, but people have to voluntarily enroll in that. And the Women Veterans Memorial in Washington has done an excellent job for years of getting women to enroll and doing outreach. But again, it's self-selected. It's a self-selected sample.
So there's not some big list out there of veterans that you all would have access to. That's private information.
Oh, yes. There's no list.
Right.
So does the federal government send anything out to let people know they can enroll in these services? Do they send out that information, or is it something that, you have to educate folks on because they don't know it's there?
I think both. You know, I think that the government tries to provide transition planning. When people leave the service, there's a mandatory class that they go to called the Transition Assistance Program, and they learn about the benefits that are available to them. They have access to veteran service officers who can help them process claims and so forth. You know, but these kids are anxious to get home. They're not necessarily wanting to admit that they have problems at that point. Oftentimes there's a perception that if they do, that they'll be kept in the military longer. And so, you know, they're just not really forthcoming at that point about, and they may not even know at that point what they need. And so, you know, that's, we catch some at that point, but probably not the majority. And so we have to continue with these outreach efforts and continue to educate people about their entitlements.
Well, I know that in some of these cases, particularly with the Reserve and the National Guard people were coming back and they go through this transition training, and it goes in one ear and out the other because they're anxious to get home. They're anxious to go back to their families and their jobs and that sort of thing, so they don't think about it in those terms.
Right. And one of the other things, too, and Kelly alluded to this, the National Service Officers who are available at every hospital, they work for veterans for free. Basically, they will do all the legwork for you. You have to come in and sign a power of attorney, but then they take over for you. They will handle claims, education. They know the ins and the outs of the system. They are trained to do this and to work for you and get results. And veterans need to stop and see them, and they need to understand. And organizations like mine, like we have life membership if you're wounded, it's free. We work for free. We never ask for a penny to do anything, but we will try to help and get people pointed in the right direction rather than have them sit around for 3 or 4 or 5 years, do nothing, and then wonder why nothing happened in that interim.
What are some of the other issues that are facing vets? We've talked a lot about the medical issues and those sorts of things, but as they come back and try to transition back into civilian life, what are some of the difficulties they may encounter?
Well, one big problem with our women veterans is it's very difficult to translate military experience to civilian experience. And so they have a very difficult time finding jobs. That's one of the things we try to help them with in our veteran service organizations like Post 644 and the Purple Hearts, is to write resumes and to translate that experience to something that's employable. You know, we have one woman that belongs to our post who, you know, she served and she came back and she had this you know, very technologically complicated job and a high security clearance when she was in the military. And she came back and she couldn't find anything except waitressing. And so she literally lived with her infant daughter in her car for a year trying to find a job to support herself and her child. You know, and that just shouldn't happen. Now, that was, you know, more than a decade ago that happened.
How would you translate that work that she did then? Now, what would you say to her now if she came back with that experience? How would that experience help her, and what kind of jobs might she be qualified for now?
I don't know about her particular case, but we have folks that specialize in sitting down, you know, instead of using military language to describe what people do, we have folks that will translate the military language into common civilian language so that it makes sense to employers who don't have military experience. And that's key.
That's very true. And they do translate now occupations in the military to occupations in civilian life that will work. We have quite a few companies in the area. General Electric is a big helper. If you've seen the Walmart ad, they've stepped up and they said they will hire veterans. Trying to think of CentOS is a very big hiring area for veterans. But there are things out there. We're having many more job fairs. We need to get more publicity. We need to get more items out because sometimes it seems like it's a last-minute thing and we don't know about it. And people are like, oh, my goodness, I didn't know. But it's getting better, but it still needs to get much, much more better.
Are there you talked about some training programs and that. Are there a lot out there for veterans now? Is it something that the government's providing? Is it something that just companies are providing? What opportunities are available, if any?
Well, there's both. The companies are providing. Cincinnati State has a good program. They just graduated some veterans in technological fields. There are areas in, say, plumbing, electrician. I believe there are union jobs, things you can get into as an apprenticeship. That really help. And they are reaching out to veterans, and it's really good to see, especially these youngsters that come in. Some companies are afraid. They feel like they have a lot of issues, and some do. And that's where the VA can come in, and it does, and it can help substantially.
You know, and I think the publicity about things like PTSD has been a double-edged sword. Obviously, we are working very hard to identify veterans that have PTSD and to offer them appropriate treatment. But at the same time, all of the publicity about that has given people the impression that most veterans are damaged, and that is just not true. Most veterans are not damaged. Most veterans do not have PTSD. And if they do, we have treatment for that that's curative. We have treatment for that that reduces their symptoms to the point where it's not going to be a problem for them in an employment setting. And so unfortunately, we have maybe stigmatized veterans and not done that intentionally, of course, but with all the focus on the mental health needs, we've unintentionally stigmatized veterans. And I would like to see some of that go away. I would like for us to recognize that these veterans are highly skilled, highly motivated, and have the kinds of training and experience and motivation that translate extremely well to the workplace, and we need to be making an effort to get more of these kids into good jobs.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. This group of young men and women, probably not only the best trained but the smartest, they're just a great group of I call them kids, but young adults. And they go in there, and people need to remember this is volunteer. They're going in there to sacrifice for our liberties and our way of life, and they're putting their life on the line to do it. And they need to have an opportunity to get back. And one of the things I do agree with what Kelly said, but part of the thing is if they can get a good job, provide for their family, that gives them something else to look for. If you're sitting around in despair or living out of a car and the homeless situation is getting appalling, we're working on it, but it's too many times people rely on alcohol and drugs as a sedative to what ails them, and they won't seek help, and they should.
This is Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. We're talking today about veterans issues as we head into the Memorial Day weekend. We'll continue our discussion in just a moment.
Support comes from Red Dog Pet Resort and Spa, offering complete boarding and amenities for dogs and cats with availability for a Memorial Day weekend, including 24-hour staffing, an in-ground pool, indoor-outdoor runs, fun and fitness, and a doggy enrichment program. Red Dog Pet Resort and Spa, 5081 Madison Road. Information at reddogcincinnati.com.
Support comes from the Reading and Comprehension Specialist at Langsford Learning in Blue Ash and Westchester. Dedicated to developing confident readers, Langsford uses research-validated approaches to close reading and comprehension gaps. To learn more or to enroll in summer sessions, you can visit weteachreading.com. That's weteachreading.com. Support comes from Granite Rocks, one of the region's leading fabricators of granite countertops. Their indoor slab showroom features over 150 popular and exotic colors. Template to installation can take 5 days or less, and all the work is done by Granite Rock employees. You can schedule an appointment or request an estimate online at granite-rocks.com.
This is Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We're talking today about veterans and veterans issues as we head into Memorial Day. My guest, Veterans Administration Medical Center Coordinator for Dual Diagnosis Service and past commander of the Greater Cincinnati Women's Post 644 of the American Legion, Kelly Knox, and Military Order of the Purple Heart, Chapter 3620, Commander Tony Cole. Also on the panel today, WVXU reporter Howard Wilkinson, who I have said has knows more, probably forgotten more about military and veterans issues than I know. And we're going to give Howard the first question this time.
Well, I just wanted to talk a little bit about, and Tony, particularly for you, you know, as a Vietnam veteran, and mentioned earlier that you came back and there were no parades and there were no, you know, great public acknowledgement of your service and all of the other Vietnam veterans because it was a very unpopular war. Do you see that public attitude changing now towards these young men and women who are coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan? And does it make any difference in terms of how they are treated by the system, whether the VA system or employment and those kind of issues?
Oh, yeah, I definitely see not only a resurgence in thanking them. Some of the Blue Star mothers who are mothers that have youngsters that serve, they go to the airports, they welcome the planes in. There's much better attitude toward what these young folks do. You'll see them in airports in uniform. People go up, they shake their hand, and you should. You should thank them for their service. They're giving up for you. And even if I might add on the Vietnam veterans, one of the things I'd like to see veterans do, if they could join an organization or just go, and they'd be welcome to come to mine, and I'm sure to Kelly's also, even if they are men. But to be amongst veterans, and they can talk about things that other people relate to. They understand what you're talking about, which may seem silly to you, but really doesn't to a lot of other people. The greatest thing that's happened for Vietnam vets is parades. You go to parades like Opening Day Parade here in Cincinnati. When they see us come down, they'll get up. You'll get a standing ovation from everybody, and they're just tickled to death to see you. And it's really quite a reward after all the years of just not even admitting what you did.
I mean, you were with an American Legion post, Kelly, 644, which was originally, when it began, frowned upon by the American Legion because it was a woman's post. Are things changing in terms of the service organizations?
Well, when Post 644 began, it was actually, you know, in the late 40s, early 50s. And there were actually more than 50 women's posts in Ohio alone back then. And they served women who served in World War II. Nowadays, Post 644 is unfortunately one of only six women's posts in the country that we've been able to find. You know, I think that part of it is about apathy. You know, I'm a veteran of the Bosnian War and the First Gulf War. Nobody knows anything about the Bosnian War. When I mention the Bosnian War, people just kind of get a blank look on their face. And I think that there is a shift in attitude in terms of thanking veterans that come back. Part of that is kind of a reaction to the unfortunately very negative coming home that the Vietnam veterans received. But on top of that, kind of underlying that perhaps, is sort of this apathy towards veterans and apathy towards, you know, we've been at war for a long time now in Iraq and Afghanistan. People are kind of war weary. And a lot of people don't really understand even still what's going on in those conflicts. People don't understand what's gone on in recent conflicts like, you know, Panama and Bosnia, et cetera. So I think we need to break through that apathy and get young people interested in advocating for their own needs. And young people today just aren't joiners, and so we have to work extra hard at doing that.
Well, I mean, a lot of people I know, and Tony, in your organization, did not come to the Purple Heart chapter until much later after their military service.
Correct.
You know, particularly Vietnam veterans who stayed away
Many of us, Howard, we didn't even know that the Purple Heart Organization existed. It is chartered by Congress. We are a 501c3, but many people, I belong to the Marine Corps League, the VFW, the American Legion, many organizations, but this specific one I'm extremely proud of because of our makeup, and our makeup is all combat wounded veterans, men and women. And we work for all veterans, but we do. We put every cent that we make goes into work. We have no overhead whatsoever. And I think that's important, and I'll get off point just a tad here about giving. I think it's great. I think there's no more generous country in the world than the United States. But all I would ask is there are so many organizations out there put their hand out for your money. Just investigate. Make sure that you're happy with what this organization does and the percentage of what they give towards veterans or toward whatever crisis that you happen to be giving money for.
And there are ways of doing that by checking out some of these organizations.
Oh, if you go online, charities.org, there are right. quite a few that rate them. It's an independent rating system. They'll tell you if they're the board members are paid, if they have a CEO, whatever they might have, but it will tell you what their expenses are.
You talk about the transitioning back and the reaction from the public, and you talk about what people think. What about your families? What about veterans' families? Is it difficult to get back into a family, into your family, after you've been gone and done something that's so very different, perhaps, than anybody else in your family has done?
It is, and I think the experience of that is somewhat different between men and women. We think mostly of men when we think of veterans. But for women, you have to think about the average age of the veterans that we're serving that served in Iraq and Afghanistan. For women, is 30 compared to 46 for men. And so we're talking about prime childbearing age here. We're talking about women that have children and women who want children. And so we need to be really thinking about families and family planning and helping folks with the kinds of issues that they have with young children when we talk about serving this population.
I think it's very true. And depending on where you were and the level of, say, combat, for instance, I was in combat. But many veterans come home and they basically stay in the house. They won't go out. They're not outgoing at all. They're very wary of things. It's a very difficult transition to get them to become an outward person, to be like they used to be. You are changed, but for whatever reason, depending on how you react to it, it can be make you a gigantic introvert.
We're just about out of time. Before we wrap up, I thought it'd be nice to know how you plan to spend your Memorial Day and how you wish others, perhaps don't have direct connections to veterans, would spend their Memorial Day.
I sometimes speak at events on Memorial Day. I'm not doing that this year, but I'll definitely go to about 3 events honoring veterans and spend a good deal of time on that day reflecting about the sacrifices of our nation's veterans and in my case, saying some special prayers.
We'll be in a parade. The Purple Heart will be in the Cheviot Parade. We're always in that every year. We will attend several events and lay some wreaths privately at some honorable soldiers that have given their all for us. Those are their true heroes. And the only thing that I would also add to that, to ask people, it's not about remembering, it's about not forgetting. We should not forget as the year goes around. We don't have to make it a top priority, but we need to keep these people in our thoughts and prayers, and don't forget what they do for this great country.
Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening to Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. My guest today, Veterans Administration Medical Center Coordinator for Dual Diagnosis Service and past commander of the Greater Cincinnati Women's Post 644 of the American Legion, Kelly Knox, Military Order of the Purple Heart Chapter 3620 Commander Tony Cole, and WVXU reporter Howard Wilkinson. Archives of our programs are available on our website, WVXU.org. Producer for today's program is Pete Reitmeier. We had engineering help from Chelsea Vandedrink and Rick Endress.